You're tuned to Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. Good afternoon. I'm Louis Sines, your host for Perspectives, and joining us today is Charles Horak. Charles, of course, is no stranger to KTEP. He is a host of On Film. More importantly, he's also the artistic director of the Plaza Classic Film Festival. First, I'd like to take the time to welcome Chuck. Chuck, thank you for being with us and taking time out of your busy schedule.
Thanks, Louis.
This has become a tradition. So what year is it in now? And tell us about how this idea came about. It was kind of just floating around at first.
Well, amazingly, this is our sixth year already. It's just flown by. And in that time, we've become what we believe is the world's largest classic film festival, which is also amazing that my hometown of El Paso, Texas, you know, can be host to such a magnificent film festival as this. And of course, part of that is the Plaza Theater and the venue we have to showcase these films in. And that's really where it began, was during the renovation and restoration of the Plaza Theater around the time it reopened as a performing arts center. Eric Pearson at the El Paso Community Foundation and I were having a conversation about raising some money to put projection equipment and a big screen back in the theater, because even though it was a performing arts center, the El Paso Community Foundation had wanted to make sure that it still had the capability of showing film, since it was El Paso's grandest, finest movie palace, and that's how most people remember it, of a certain age, shall we say. So, you know, we started talking about doing some fundraising, and at that point, the foundation decided to just step up and purchase the equipment, and so we went over some of the technical specs, and we're working through that, and once the projectors were on order and we had a delivery date and an install date, obviously the conversation turned to, well, how are we going to use these projectors? And at that point, I began putting together some ideas, which really started quite modestly as maybe a Friday evening type extravaganza. People hadn't seen a movie in the Plaza Theater in about 30 years by this point. And so we wanted to have some sort of celebration to bringing movies back to the Plaza. And that evening celebration morphed into a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and before we knew it, it blossomed into what became known that first year as the Movies Return to the Plaza Theater, which was an 11-day, 65-film extravaganza that was not only showcasing the restored Plaza Theater, but also the annex there where the Philanthropy Theater is, which we now have a very nice 200-seat digital cinema that's part of the complex. So, you know, really that was the genesis of what became known as the Plaza Classic Film Festival in its second year. This was really started out as just a one-off celebration of the history of movies at the Plaza. And we had such an overwhelming response from the community that clearly before those 11 days were over, you know, it was clear that this needed to become an annual event, and that's what it's become.
The title is the Plaza Classic Film Festival. How did you come up with that title?
I get that question a lot. You know, certainly we focus on classic film festivals, on classic films. There are very few classic film festivals, and so we distinguished ourselves early on with that as a theme. Since then, several others have popped up. TCM does a marvelous one in Hollywood now. That just turned 4 years old. But, you know, the term classic is rather flexible in my lexicon, at least. And as I sit down each year to program the festival during the course of the year, you know, certainly many of our films are falling within a range, a chronological age that most people would be self-evidently classic, say from the silent period up into the 60s and 70s. And even into the 80s now, it's hard to imagine that we have films that are 30 years old that were made in the 1980s. But there's always some newer films, too. I sprinkle in some titles that are a little newer of age. They haven't quite hit the 20, 25-year mark to be termed maybe classic with a big C. But I think they're films that are remarkable. They're of a quality and probably a staying power that they will be seen as classics. One example from this year is where we have two films by the great Japanese animator Hayao Miyazaki, who is going to be showcased with presentations of Princess Mononoke, an anime film, as well as My Neighbor Totoro, two fantastic films that, you know, really don't need to wait until they're 30 years old to be called classics. I think of them as modern classics. And so, you know, it's flexible, but I'd say that probably 90% of our titles fall, you know, between the 20s and the early 80s. And then we have the exceptions to the rule. One of the big exceptions, too, is that through my work on this radio station and my own program on film, I've gotten to know over the years a number of local filmmakers. And most El Pasoans don't know that we have a pretty thriving, fantastic film community right here in our own midst. And so from the very get-go of the Plaza Classic Film Festival, we've included a showcase, which we call Local Flavor, which are contemporary films, films made in the last year or two, 3 years, by local regional filmmakers. So we can celebrate some of the talent that's bubbling up right here, give these filmmakers an opportunity to screen their work on a screen for an audience, give our audiences, maybe sidetrack them from some of the classic films they're coming down to see, and introduce them to the work of some of the filmmakers in our community. So we also have a number of films each year, including this one, both features and shorts, by local talent, which are only a year to 3 years old.
Do you have a certain theme every year, or does it matter?
Well, we have many themes.
Every genre.
I know we have 30 minutes here, but that's literally not enough time to talk about 11 days. And I think we have 83 feature film presentations, some 100 short films that will be shown during the festival, plus concerts and outdoor screenings and free events and film talks and celebrity guests. So really the best thing to do is go to the website, plazaclassic.com, where you can find everything, and it's always being updated. But everything's listed there now. All the films have been released. The tickets are on sale at the Plaza box office or through Ticketmaster. You can find a printable schedule there, so you can start mapping out your days of what you're going to see. Festival passes are on sale now. We also have a thriving Facebook page, and so you can go and like us on Facebook. It's just Plaza Classic. We have almost 8,000 members now, so we're definitely going to tip over that in the next week or so, I think. So those are really the best ways for you to keep up to date and plan your festival. But as far as themes, you know, the festival is so large and the scope is so big that we don't have a single theme beyond the classic idea or umbrella. Within the festival, though, I do program what I would call threads, which help to break some of the programming down into linkages where you can begin to link films. So, for instance, this year, one of the things we're doing is celebrating the life and career of Roger Ebert, who passed away at the age of 70 this year, and probably the most well-known film critic ever and that will ever be. He had an amazing viewership as well as readership. And so, you know, a lot of festivals are figuring out ways to celebrate his life. One of the things we're doing a little differently is not so much celebrating him, but celebrating the films he loved. And so working with his longtime editor, Laura Emmerich from the Chicago Sun-Times, who will be here at the festival to help introduce some of these films, I've been putting together a list of not only great films, but films that were his personal favorites. And it's a way for audiences maybe to learn something about Roger Ebert by learning about the films he loved and thinking, maybe seeing those films through his eyes and trying to think, you know, what was it about this film that he considered not only great, but just a favorite? It was a film that he returned to over and over again. So we have films from like Citizen Kane to The Third Man to Fitzcarraldo, the great German film with Klaus Kinski. You know, we have films like La Dolce Vita, the Fellini film that was a favorite of his. We even have a fairly notorious film by Russ Meyer called Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, which Roger Ebert wrote the screenplay for. And he did that a few times, and often for Russ Meyer, who was a bit of an exploitation director in the 60s and 70s. And so it's interesting that he would choose to write screenplays for that kind of film. But we are showcasing that, Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. So that would be an example of one thread. And you can look up, when you look up films on our website, right above the titles, it will show you which series or thread it's a part of. So another type of thread is what I call rediscovery, where I've selected a handful of films which are just really astounding and amazing, but for whatever reason, most audiences have never heard of. And maybe it's because there were rights issues for decades. Maybe they've been out of circulation. Maybe they were just passed over. They were ahead of their time. But we have a number of titles like that. One of them is called Phase 4. It's an extremely unique science fiction film from the early 70s by Saul Bass. It was his only feature film, and Saul Bass was really known as a graphic designer and designer of many of the iconic posters that came up for Hitchcock and Kubrick, as well as a director of title sequences. So if you remember the title sequence for, say, Vertigo, Saul Bass made that title sequence. Psycho, Spartacus. He worked with a number of great directors in constructing their title sequences, but this was his only feature film, and it's a very unique film, and was recently, the original ending, which was never shown theatrically, was recently rediscovered by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, and will be presenting that film. You know, very few people have seen it in its complete version. So, you know, that would be an example of a rediscovery film. We, of course, have our big signature classics, which is a thread of films which tend to sit in our 7 p.m. slots in the main theater. And these are the acknowledged, you know, redwoods of the cinema forest. The films that have been popular, have always been popular since they came out, and remain amazingly beloved of audiences. And so, you know, we're showing things like, we're opening the festival with West Side Story with special guest Rita Moreno. We've got The Sound of Music with special guest Angela Cartwright. Meet Me in St. Louis with special guest Margaret O'Brien. Films like Dirty Harry, The Graduate, Ben-Hur, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. So those really big tentpole films make up their own sort of thread as well. So if you go there, we have it broken down for you, family films and comedies and by genre even, so you can figure out what suits you best.
Some critics have said that Hollywood is running out of ideas, and so we're starting to see remakes and a lot of, you know, like The Lone Ranger, and remakes of like, you know, was it last year or 2 years ago we saw True Grit and stuff like that. So in your opinion, because some of the movies that they're sort of being careful as far as not to remake or to touch are some of the classics.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit about.
Although occasionally you hear someone wanting to redo, say, To Kill a Mockingbird, or and you just think, how could that be? Or, you know, obviously no one's done Casablanca over again, thankfully, or Gone with the Wind. But, you know, certainly the Hollywood model right now is one with that lavishes so much budget money on these films that for the backers, they have to know there's already a pre-sold audience of people who want to go see that. That's why we see so many comic book hero films. That's why we see so many sequels. So if something was popular once, you know, we can keep milking that. Part of what, one of the things that's going on is that most theatergoers in America don't realize is what we're seeing in our theaters is more and more not really designed for us. It's designed for a global audience. And so, you know, just today I got a press release from Paramount Studios in my inbox of releasing the cast for the next Transformers movie, Transformers 4. And the two leads are both Chinese, extremely popular Chinese actors, singers. And so, you know, clearly Paramount is making that film to be big in China and overseas. So that's part of what's driving it as well. I think Steven Spielberg made headlines a few weeks ago by saying that a day was fast approaching where we're going to see a number of major failures, box office failures of huge films that's going to reset the paradigm in Hollywood again. I don't give up hope because every year there's phenomenal independent films or smaller budgeted films that still are being made. You know, at the root of all of this, and what I hope the film festival is doing is educating audiences, elevating their connoisseurship so that they demand or seek out better films. You know, I don't think we get the kinds of films that we do lately simply because of the mathematics in Hollywood. I think it's that we still go to the theater and we vote with our money. And so one of the things a great film festival can do is get people interested in getting off the beaten path, to watching, to understanding film as an art form, and therefore taking more pleasure from films that that treat their audiences in a more sophisticated way. And, you know, as I put together each film festival, even though it's made up of some over 80 films, and they're coming from a diverse background of directors and actors and storytelling and genres, time periods, and black and white and color and widescreen and not widescreen, silent and sound. I like to think that if you somehow magically were able to see all of those films in a festival for 11 days, that you would come away with a really great rounded education about sort of the extents of what the cinema can be and some of the great artists that have worked in the cinema, and that that would excite you for the rest of the year to go and explore on your own. We live in this amazing age where so much is at our fingertips, content-wise and moving image-wise, not just in our theaters, but on our televisions and our computers. So I think part of what we try to accomplish at the film festival is not only give people the sound of music, which they've probably seen before, but maybe not with 2,000 people on the big screen. That's a transformative experience to see a film like that in, but also a Phase 4 or an Alphaville, something they may have never heard of. They don't know the director. They know none of the stars. It might even be in a foreign language with subtitles, but they will be amazed. And they will be changed by that experience.
So another critic, and actually this is a biography of James Stewart that I read, and I can't remember who wrote this one. But the author said one of the problems that he saw with the difference between actors in the Jimmy Stewart, Cary Grant era was that these guys were actually celebrities. Mm. They were ladies and gentlemen, and that the stars we have now are basically just prima donnas and divas and people who want this amount of money and go on to the next one.
Yeah, there's not certainly we don't give movies and movie stars the same cachet that they had. You know, back when the movies were young, it was the predominant art form, entertainment form in America, and every man, woman, and child basically went to see one or two movies a week. You know, the number of tickets sold in the 1920s and 30s, we haven't sold that many tickets in decades, despite the population growth. So part of that was that there was a studio system to create the imagery of who Jimmy Stewart was. It was not just the films he was in. There was a whole machinery of publicity that kept him out there and crafted who he was as a human being that sometimes differed from the reality, but sometimes not. So there's that machinery that's missing now. So the stars are pretty much out there with their publicists doing their own thing and often, you know, getting headlines for the wrong reasons. All of those things would have been suppressed in the old days when you had a studio system that could go and make sure that bad news got disappeared pretty fast and never made it to the headlines. I think, too, that, you know, I often like to think of other art forms in relation. And, you know, if you're a painter or a sculptor, you know, you might be making a painting a week, a month, multiple paintings or sculptures a year, certainly. The Jimmy Stewarts and Cary Grants you mentioned were making 2-3 movies a year, sometimes for decades on end. What a way to craft your artistry by practice of just doing it over and over and getting better at it. Nowadays, you know, a big movie star might make one film every 2 years or one a year, if that, and their career might only last, their highlight career might only be a decade. So the big movie stars of the past had a longevity. They also had a lot of material they could work through. One of those that we're celebrating this year, this would have been his centennial, is Burt Lancaster. And I think he's a great example of a type of movie star that you see very rarely nowadays, or even back then. He was a movie star to be sure, but he was also an actor. He was an artist, and he constantly selected films and projects, either independently through his production company or through his studio work, that would challenge him as an artist. And so we're showing 4 films that from his career that might surprise a lot of people. We have the big one is Sweet Smell of Success, one of his greatest films, an amazing film noir. He plays a not very likable character, a very powerful media icon, and basically a syndicated columnist who can ruin careers or make careers, and he does both in the film. But we're showing some other films, some really interesting choices he made, an amazing film made in France called The Train, he's a French resistance train conductor who's trying to stop the Nazis from looting Paris and getting all these artworks back to Berlin by train at the end of the war. And another film is The Swimmer, one that most people have never heard of, very challenging role in which the entire film he's in a swimsuit. That's all. No shoes, no shirt, no nothing. And he was pushing 50 by the time he made that film. And it's a fascinating film that was just recently restored, and I'm delighted that we can show it. So we have a number of those. The Leopard, perhaps one of his finest films ever, was an Italian film, and his voice is dubbed. And it's an Italian epic from the early 60s. Most people, again, don't know it. But it's an extraordinary film, and so we're going to be looking at some of the aspects of his life, and I think you can dovetail that with thinking about, you know, what makes a great cinema artist. You know, today we have very few examples like that. Maybe George Clooney, who's made a career out of picking some interesting material to work with and using his celebrity and position to push himself into interesting projects and not just settle for the big budget, you know, action films.
And I'm not sure if this is true or not, but as you mentioned, you know, films, of course, have changed, but it's because of technology and the green boards, and we can do everything now.
Yes.
But with The Train, these were really real trains. And I heard that when he goes down that mountain, all the way, you know, rolling down the mountain, that was really him doing it.
Yeah, I believe so. You know, and certainly that's part of the thrill of the classic era, is that mostly everything you see on screen happened in front of a camera. There were obviously special effects back in those days, but those would have been models and other things which still had to be photographed in front of a camera. Somebody had to make that. And there's just a, even if they don't look lifelike, the effects from classic cinema, I think, still engage us in a way that contemporary effects don't, because there's a coldness and a computerness to them. The best effects are the ones that just disappear, and very few filmmakers today seem to be using their tools to make the magic disappear into the background. You know, they want to call attention to it, and I think it takes the viewer out of the film. And the other thing about the classic period is that, you know, these great films are great because they started with great stories, and storytelling has often fallen by the wayside in our modern cinema for other desires, but you know, all of the films that we'll be showing have amazing stories at the heart of them. The Train is a great example, this great World War II film set in France. And as you say, made with real trains. And part of the visceral attraction to the action and engaging the audience is that you see the actors on real trains moving down a track, sometimes crashing trains, and knowing that those are real trains that weigh tons and tons of pounds. And you can't duplicate that in a green screen environment, I think. So, you know, we have just so many things. Warner Brothers is celebrating its 90th anniversary this year, so we've got a lot of Warner Brothers films that we're going to be celebrating. Believe it or not, Bugs Bunny turned 75 this year, so we've got a lot of Bugs Bunny shorts. If you look, we're doing a bunch of free screenings, what we call Plaza Days, where we just open up the doors of the theater and let people come in, enjoy some organ music, enjoy the theater, and enjoy a bunch of shorts. So we have a bunch of Looney Tunes that we're going to be showing for free. The first feature film we're showing is celebrating Warner Brothers. It'll be The Adventures of Robin Hood. It'll be free on Thursday, August 1st. The festival runs from August 1st to the 11th. And as I said, it's all on the website, plazaclassic.com. We have amazing guests lined up this year. I've already mentioned Rita Moreno and Angela Cartwright and Margaret O'Brien. We also have the director of an amazing film some people will know. It's sort of a cult classic called Koyaanisqatsi. It's an Indian word meaning life out of balance. And it's really a new type of documentary, and which is just sound and vision, a beautiful Philip Glass score, I like to think of it as the 2001 of documentaries. And Godfrey Reggio will be here, who directed that and a number of other great documentaries to celebrate that work. So
the Warner Brothers, I think very few people know that. I mean, they were actually brothers.
Yes.
And they were immigrants, and they got involved in the movie industry. But correct me if I'm wrong, but weren't they involved as far as the talkies, the first talkies?
Yes. I think it was the youngest Warner brother, his name escapes me, was a real proponent of
Jack.
Early ideas. Well, Jack became the mogul, but the earliest Warner brother had really pushed to pioneer some of the early sound technologies, and they premiered in 1927, The Jazz Singer, which was the first feature film with a synchronized soundtrack that had audio. Not just music and sound effects, but the actors speaking, and it was revolutionary, and it was crude. And the sad part about that story is that all Warner Brothers were on their train, on their way to the premiere, going cross country when the youngest died, and they missed their own premiere of this revolutionary moment, and went back to Hollywood with his body and had a funeral. So the youngest Warner brother, who was really pushing for that move into the sound era, didn't live to see it. He died on literally days before the premiere.
The schedule that you mentioned that's online, people can pick and choose as far as what movies to go see, or do they buy them by the movie in blocks,
yep.
Or there are a variety of
all of the above.
Packages.
You know, the great thing is you can buy a festival pass for $200, and that gets you into anything, anytime. You just wear it around your neck, and if you can't come for a certain day or a certain movie, you can give it to a friend. Anybody wearing that pass can just walk right in. We have a express lane, so on the big movies, you don't have to wait in a long line. You just walk right into the theater. Obviously, there's individual tickets for most of the films. There are a number of free events, so you can see those on the web as well. All of our outdoor Arts Festival Plaza concerts and screenings outside are free. We have some $5 events up on the top of the Mills parking garage. A couple of films we're showing, Kevin Smith's Clerks, as well as Pee-wee's Big Adventure, up there for $5. You can amazing 360-degree view of the city from the 10th floor of the Mills parking garage. It's a great place to watch a movie. The tickets, the amazing thing about this festival is we've had such great sponsors over the years that we're able to put this on with primarily an all-volunteer cast and crew, and keep the ticket prices down to between $4 and $10. Most of our ticket prices are $4 and $6. Some of the big films in the evenings are $8 and $10. But certainly everything we're showing is less than the price of tickets at your local Cinemark or Premiere. So, I think it's just amazing that we can offer this richness of programming with organ concerts before a film presentation, with this amazing venue, for less than the cost of going to just a normal Cineplex.
Well, Chuck, thank you very much for being with us here today. And if you are listening online and streaming, perhaps you're considering a vacation or a trip to El Paso, you can check the schedule at plazaclassic.com. And the dates are August 1st through the 11th. Chuck, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thank you, Louis.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.